Well, Merry Christmas to you all. Great to be with you all this evening. I brought something with me. It's a little empty now. Do y'all know what this is? It's one of these Advent calendars, right? This is my daughter Lydia's. My kids used to go crazy for Advent calendars. And even though they're getting older, they still love to get their Advent calendars. But you know, I got to tell you, as a self-proclaimed chocoholic, I usually require a dad tax to be paid on candy, but I've never enforced the dad tax on Advent calendars because, let's be honest, it's not the best chocolate. If you're looking for some world-class chocolate, you can do a whole lot better than Advent calendars. And yet, we love these things. In 2024, we are set to sell out or to make a record sale of Advent calendars a year. Why is it that we love these bland, waxy chocolate calendars? Well, I think it's because of anticipation. Each day when you open up one of these little windows, it's like opening up a promise that something good is coming, even though that wait feels incredibly long. But you know, I've noticed something. I think the Advent calendars need to fix these things because culturally speaking, 25 days is not enough, right? Most of America is celebrating Christmas by Easter. That's what it's going to be next, by Thanksgiving. My neighbor had his like 20-foot Santa Claus blown up in his yard Thanksgiving morning. But then again, I walked into Home Depot in the middle of October. And what do I see across from the 10-foot Halloween skeleton and all those animatronic witches? Jolly old Saint Nick and a 12-foot Frosty the Snowman. It looked like the holidays were going at war with one another. It was ridiculous. All that to say, maybe we should think about making a 70-day Advent calendar, because clearly, culturally, we're already celebrating Christmas in October. Now, I got to tell you, this really used to bother me. My kids would tell you it bothered me because I'm turning into a curmudgeon-y old man. My wife will tell you it's because I'm a bit of a liturgical snob. But I'll tell you the truth. It is because I'm neurotic. No. It's because to me, it really seemed like it was rooted in all of this corporate greed and consumerism. And I just hated how Christmas had been sabotaged. But you know, then I started thinking, maybe, just maybe, there's something deeper going on. Maybe people aren't rushing towards all of that Christmas because they just simply want more stuff, though I'm sure that has a little bit to do with it. But maybe deep down, they're longing for what Christmas represents. Maybe people are really longing for the hope and the joy and the peace that Christmas promises. You know, a lot of people are entering in this season going through some really difficult circumstances. And so what I think they're longing for is the Christmas hope. Maybe you're coming here this evening longing for some Christmas hope. This longing for hope is exactly what Isaiah was describing for us in Isaiah chapter 9. Isaiah was writing to the southern kingdom of Judah, and they were going through some really difficult times. Foreign armies were threatening to pounce on them. The economy was wobbly at best. Corrupt leaders were running rampant and immorally. If you've ever looked at your newsfeed and wondered where in the world is all of this stuff headed, then you have an idea of how the southern kingdom of Judah felt. They were longing for a break in the clouds. But in the midst of that dark reality, we have Isaiah 9, who comes preaching something rather astonishing, that God is going to give them an answer for their longing hearts. He says to the people, God is going to give you a promise that a child is to be born, a son to be given, and the government will be on his shoulders. Through Isaiah, God is saying to his people, don't lose hope. I know you are going through some really dark seasons, but I am going to send someone to you who will be a light in your darkness. I'm going to send you a special baby. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. That sounds very sweet and lovely, especially on a December 24th evening. But I want you to try to imagine for a moment being one of those struggling farmers or one of those scared mothers in Judah, and you're hearing the words of Isaiah and him go on and on about how God is going to send this sweet little innocent baby to be the answer to all your problems. I don't know about you, but I think that would be a hard pill to swallow. If I'm sitting there listening to Isaiah, I'm coming up to him after the sermon, and I'm saying, listen here, Bubba, you need to go back to God and tell him, listen, a baby is not going to cut it. I don't know if you know this, Lord, but we got some serious problems on our hands. We got this invading army who's threatening us. We got this collapsing economy, and you want to send us diaper changes? Give me a break. We don't need a baby. What we need is a strong military commander who can knock these forces out, or we need some coins in our coffers to get us through this economic hardship. We don't need a sweet, cuddly, soft baby. Isaiah, we got real problems, and so you need to go tell God we need real answers. But God doesn't listen to the people. He doesn't give them the obvious promise. He holds to this baby, a vulnerable, dependent, fragile baby. And despite what it looks like, God tells his people that this child will be the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace that the people have been longing for. God was essentially saying to his people, I know this doesn't look like the answer that you've been hoping for, but you got to trust me. This child is exactly what your longing hearts have been hoping for. It didn't make a whole lot of sense then. It might not even make a whole lot of sense now. But you know what? That's God. You and I, when we go to prayer with God, we want the big, flashy interventions. But Isaiah reminds us that that's not always God's ways. It's almost like Isaiah was saying to Judah, and he's saying to us this evening, you think you need a show of force. You think you need all the glitter and glam out there to answer your problems. But God's quiet answer packs far more of a powerful punch than you realize. Yes, that baby is going to look vulnerable and humble, but there's a promise wrapped inside of him that is unshakable. And so what Isaiah is actually reminding us is that God's weakest move is always going to outmatch our darkest problems. Friends, that is good news for us, that God's weakest point is still stronger than our greatest threat that we will ever face, no matter what darkness you are encountering during this season. God's weakness is still stronger than that threat. Now, if the Christmas story ended there with God using his weakness to show his true strength, it would still be an astonishing story. But there's still more to this promise to unpack. There's something even more profound going on with this promise. You see, in this promise to send a child, God wasn't merely promising to craft some brilliant plan to solve all of the world's problems while he stays off at a safe distance, some long-distant deity that we don't actually know. He wasn't promising just to simply send us a solution. The promise is that he is going to become the solution. And that's where it gets even better. You see, if we were to turn back to Isaiah, we would see that this child has a name. His name is to be Emmanuel, which means God with us. Now, to the people of Judah listening, they probably thought this was nice, symbolic, you know, sentiment. But you and I, we're lucky, because we can fast forward to Luke chapter 2, where we learn that God didn't mean this metaphorically. He meant this quite literally. And so in Luke, what we find is that God himself took on our humanity. And what that means is he also moved in to our mess, into our darkness, into our struggles, into everything that we're facing. And so what that tells us is that God isn't interested in merely reaching down and giving us a helping hand while he stays safely off at a distance. No, he's willing to step in to our darkness, right beside us, to walk with us through it all. That's the Christmas message, that our deepest need isn't for a distant, problem-solving God, but for a God to be present with us. We don't need someone who can just simply fix our circumstances. We need someone who can transform our lives. And that transformation can only happen through relationship, through an intimate, ongoing presence with the one who knows us completely and who loves us entirely, with the one who created us and who can recreate us, with the one whose grace and power can do for us what we are unable to do on our own. Friends, the truth is, if God had merely fixed all of our problems without actually changing our hearts and our lives, the sad reality is, you and I both know, we'd just manage to find ourselves living in the shadow once again. The truth is, we need someone to walk with us in the darkness so that then he can lead us out of the darkness and into his light. Okay, this is a little heady for a Christmas Eve service. I get it. So try to think of it like this, all right? My mom loves to tell this story about when I was a little boy, about 4 years old. She was at home, sick in bed, knocked out in a NyQuil-induced coma. And so I decided, you know what? I need to cheer up Mama. And that's when I decided I was going to paint her a masterpiece. And let me tell you, Picasso had nothing on me, nothing but the best for my mama. The only problem was I decided that my canvas would be the long hallway wall in our apartment. Well, let me tell you, after hours of work, when my mom finally woke up from her NyQuil coma, she was impressed. She was in awe. She had no words to speak. Some of you parents know what my mom went through, and you're probably thinking she probably lost her cool, too. But no, she didn't. She simply cleaned up the mess as best she could. She cleaned me up, and then she said, "Honey, please don't do that again. I need to rest." And so she went back to her NyQuil coma. Of course, then I felt terrible, because I knew deep down I had let my mama down. And so I needed to make it up to her. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make Mom dinner. So I got out all the pots and the pans, the flour, the sugar, the spices, and I'm going to town. I'm mixing, I'm stirring, I'm adding. But then something clicks. Chase, you're 4 years old. You don't know how to actually cook anything. Time to go to plan B. Let's do some pretend food. Let's make Mom some spaghetti. So I'm thinking about how to make this pretend spaghetti, and I walk over to my mom's cassette tapes. Y'all remember cassette tapes? That's how old I am, okay? And I grab her favorite cassette, Michael Jackson Thriller, and I start unwinding this thing into a bowl to make my mom her pretend spaghetti. And so then, once again, when my mom wakes up from her sleep, and she sees her kitchen in chaos, her favorite Michael Jackson tape in ruins, and her little baby boy brightly smiling ear to ear with his pretend spaghetti, she once again was just utterly amazed at what I had done, completely speechless. But again, once again, she kept her cool, and she simply cleaned up the mess and then cleaned me up. It's at this point she realized, if she went back to sleep, I'm just going to keep getting myself in a mess. And so she realized she needed to do something radical. And that was the day my mother discovered the miracle of duct tape. No. It's finally clicking for you all, I think. Okay, there it is. No, what she did was, as miserable as she felt, she stayed up and joined me. She played with me. She did stuff with me. And in doing so, she kept me from getting into a mess again. That's a small glimpse of what we have at Christmas. Rather than just dropping a fix from on high, God chooses to be present with us, to enter into our chaos so that he can lead us out of the darkness. Friends, this is the stunning reality we see unfold in Luke 2, where the creator of the universe stepped into our world so he then can lead us into his. He doesn't simply clean up after us. He enters our story and then writes us into his greater story of redemption. Because Jesus was born, no matter what darkness lurks ahead, no matter how scary things look, no matter how hopeless your situation appears, the good news is your future, my future, our future is good. We have a hope, a living hope. We don't know every detail of what's going to happen, but no matter what is happening in your life, no matter how dark or difficult it appears, if you trust in Christ, the future is absolutely worth looking forward to. I love the story that Bishop N.T. Wright tells about an Uber driver he once had. The Uber driver noticed that Wright was a bishop, and so they began talking about all the challenges in the church and all the turmoil going on in the world and how a good and powerful God can allow so much darkness to exist. And they're going round and round about this. And according to Wright, the driver finally had the best logical conclusion the two of them could ever have come up with. The driver said, "Listen, I don't know what the solution to all this is. But one thing I do know is, if Jesus has really been born of a virgin and raised from the dead, well, then everything else that we're dealing with, no matter how dark and difficult it is, everything else is rock and roll." Right at that moment, rang up his Episcopal colleague and said, "You will never guess where I just got my Easter sermon idea from." Friends, because Jesus was born, because he conquered sin and death at the cross, everything that we are dealing with is rock and roll. Not that this dismisses our struggles. The things that keep you up at night are not small, trivial matters. But what this means is that you and I, as we stand looking at a world that is coming apart at the seams, we have a choice to make. We have a choice of where we are going to place our hope. Are we going to place our hope in the shallow fixes that this world has to offer? Or are we going to do something more radical and put our trust in the God who chose to enter into our dark reality and trust that he has already written a better ending story than you and I could ever imagine? God didn't just send us light from a faraway place. He stepped into our darkness and made his home among us. And that absolutely changes everything. So yes, I used to be annoyed that Christmas keeps getting pushed earlier and earlier every year. But now I realize it is just the symptom of a broken world that is longing for the hope of Christ. Many times it's longing in all the wrong places. Our job is to point them to the thing that they are truly longing for. As we approach this new year, we're going to hear headlines predicting uncertainty and fear and unrest. We're going to hear voices telling us to panic and worry and brace for the worst. But here's what I hope you really cling to. For to us, a child is born. To us, a son is given. And his name is Jesus. And he absolutely changes everything. When you trust in him, no matter what else is happening in your life, you can count on this. Your future is good because his light is still shining, because his love is still reaching, because his grace and his presence is still transforming. Friends, that's not just Christmas news. That's good news, and it changes everything. Amen. Amen.